Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Now, back to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
All righty. No Daryl the Guru Johnson today. He's at his son's graduation, but we do have John Dickinson from Boston. He's in a Boston studio, and he'll be at Game 6 tomorrow. And we also have another gentleman from Boston, Bob Fitzgerald. You heard him call Game 5 on 95.7 The Game. He'll be calling Game 6 tomorrow on 95.7 The Game. And Fitz, you got kind of go back to your radio roots a little bit. How was that?
Yeah, it was good. It was good. I mean, I started with the Warriors on radio in 1993 and became the TV guy fairly quickly after, and then got to do one of the finals games in 2016 when Timmy's daughter graduated high school. And unfortunately, you know, Tim is a little under the weather, so strength in numbers, baby. They just grab an available broadcaster, so I'll be sitting there kind of reunited with Jim Barnett, actually.
Oh, nice.
For Game 6 tomorrow on the radio. It's kind of fun.
All right. And while we're at it, we'll wish Tim Roy the best. Get well soon, buddy. We miss you. And Fitz, Game 6 tomorrow. What's one of the first things you're going to be looking for when that game starts?
Well, Matt, I think, you know, you and JD both know this, is that Boston turnovers are their barometer. When they're under 15, they're really good. When they're over 15, they lose. The other thing, too, the points in the paint. Whoever controls the points in the paint, the Warriors had 50 in Game 5, that's the team that wins. And so I'm going to be looking early. Is Boston having some giveaway possessions, and are the Warriors able to score inside and not just limited to launching from deep? The other thing I'm waiting on, and I'm knocking on every available piece of wood, you know, in the whole city of Boston, the Warriors have to have a pyrotechnic three-point shooting night. Like, when I see the Warriors 3 of 24 on threes, like, I'm just like, come on, man. Like, at some point, they're going to have a 15, 16 made threes evening. And, you know, I hope that's tomorrow, because that's the one thing. You know, Boston's defense is great. Nobody disputes any of that. But, you know, Game 4 here, the Warriors missed 13 wide-open threes with the defender not within 5 feet. So if Steph, Clay, Wiggins, Poole, everybody, you know, starts launching threes and they're going in, that could be the Warriors kind of riding that to victory.
Bob, the question du jour today that we've been kicking around a little bit is, when this season did you know that the Warriors were capable of winning the title? And, you know, varying answers, but was there a game or a moment where you thought, hey, they can do this year?
Well, you know, what's interesting is we had Draymond on a post-game TV after a Warrior win, right when he came back after the back injury. And the question Colin and I were asking was like, hey, you know, does it matter if you're the one seed or the two seed or whatever? And if you remember, and it's been, you know, recycled, Draymond said, we're winning the title. It doesn't matter what seed we are. We're going to win the title. And I was like, holy, whoa, wait a minute. You know, and so the resolve was he said it. And then the more I started thinking about it, now, wait a minute, if you get Steph, Clay, and Draymond, and, you know, the way Wiggins has played and Poole's emergence, like, all right, you know, who's going to beat the Warriors four times in a seven-game series? It didn't make him the favorite. There's a lot of brilliant teams in the West. But that was the first, I was like, you know what? He's right. Like who's coming in beating the Warriors four times? Like, why wouldn't they have as good a chance as anybody? So I think when Draymond got back and started to look like himself, that's kind of when I was like, you know what? They might get this. Like, they might be right in the mix, and it's kind of played out that way.
Bob Fitzgerald joining us on 95.7 The Game. He's the Warriors television voice, but he called Game 5 on the radio here at 95.7 The Game, and he's going to call Game 6 tomorrow on the radio here on 95.7 The Game also. You know, it's funny, Bob. I mean, look, I thought this was going to be a year where they'd make the playoffs, maybe win a round, maybe get beat, maybe lose in the second round, and then at that point, you figure out where you're at and how can we get back to the top. Okay, well, they're back to the top. So now my question is, how do you keep it going? How do you be one of the top three teams again next year? Like, do you have to run it all back again, kind of?
Well, to me, Matt, you know, I really thought during the year, you know what's going to bite them is just Wiseman never getting healthy. Like, they're just going to need that size, and just kind of kept waiting for, you know, man, if you had Wiseman and Looney, I'd love that center tandem. And I know you play Draymond at the speed five, but I'm like, God, if they see Jokic and they see Gobert and they see Steven Adams and Jared, they're just not going to be big enough. And if they end up getting Giannis or Embiid on the other side of the bracket, like, how would that work out? I think going forward next year, Jordan is solidified. You're going to see more Moody Kuminga. You're going to add Wiseman. And you're going to run back Steph, Clay, Draymond, Wiggins, Looney. I love where the Warriors are headed next year. Like to me, this would almost be a year early arrival, because I think next year they could really be awesome. So I'm very excited for where the Dubs are over the next couple seasons.
Bob, I want to go back to tomorrow night. And just how do you foresee what can be, and closeout games are always different to begin with, but just the juxtaposition between Steph, Clay, Draymond, you know, maybe even Looney if Iguodala gets out there, the guys that have won it before, and just they're going to be able to taste it tomorrow going into the game, and they probably already do a little bit going through practice and everything today. How do they handle that, and how does that differ from those that are in this position for the first time of trying to bring home the championship with one good game?
Well, I think it just crystallized it perfectly, is that if you look at this run, closeout game in Denver, didn't do it. Closeout game in Memphis, didn't do it. You know, closeout game in Dallas, didn't do it. This is one of those where I think they're so close to it that the previous road missteps may, you know, fade into the background. But if the game, let's say Boston has an incredible game and they stand their ground and the building's going crazy and Boston's up 18 at halftime, then it's like, all right, you know, maybe a game seven. But if this thing's close at halftime and it's close late in the third and the Warriors are like, it's right here for us 12 minutes away or 14 minutes away, then you're going to see Steph, Clay, Draymond, like you said, maybe Iguodala, Looney, guys that have been through a lot of the wars, and then that pressure on Boston's going to be like, oh my goodness, like it's all slipping away from us. I do think, you know, Boston hadn't lost consecutive games in 54 games. You had to go back to March 28th, and the Warriors win Game 4 and Game 5 now. I do think that's a, if it's a boxing thing, that's a hard left cross that staggered them. And if Boston's rolling and have a big lead, you know, I think they'll be able to play with that and ride the crowd. But if it's super tight, the experience of, you know, hey, we've won and closed out championships. We've been in monster big games. We've won 20 finals games together, you know, and Steph, Clay, Draymond. I think they'll smell it, and they'll smell that finish line. And, you know, I would not want to be Boston if it's that tight.
Bob Fitzgerald joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Bob, are we at the point in this series where, you know, it's just somebody's going to win a game or somebody's going to win two games and the adjustments are all done? Or is anybody got any trick up their sleeve, or is it too late for that?
Well, you know, what's interesting is I think Boston made a great adjustment on Steph after the 43-point game. Their bigs were up so much on him that they're like, oh, you know, Steph went 0 for 9 on threes. Look where he had to shoot those threes, and look at the defensive attention on him. And so that's where Wiggins and Payton and Poole and then Clay, you know, having a good catch-and-shoot game and scoring 21 were so critical. I think that is Boston's adjustment. They're going to say, hey, you know, we're not, it's not going to be some 40-point Curry game. So that's their adjustment. The Warriors then, okay, Steph gets rid of the ball, you got the roll man, and it's that extra pass. You know, you get it to Draymond, and it's a bounce pass to Looney for a layup, or you get it to Looney, and it's Payton cutting in from the corner. Like, that extra pass, because when you see the Warriors at 18, 20 assists, that's not their 30 assists that you're normally used to. So I think Boston likes what they did defensively. But for the Warriors, I think it's, you know, one extra pass gets that offense really humming. Now, Boston offensively, Matt, when they're under 100, they're losing all these games. So maybe the biggest adjustment for them would be, and I don't know if it's an adjustment, is does Derek White, Horford, Grant Williams, the supplementary guys kick in? Because, you know, Tatum and Smart and Jaylen Brown have been really good. Offensively, Boston needs more guys to join the party, and that hasn't been the case in their losses.
Bob, have fun tomorrow. Looking forward to it.
I'll tell you, I mean, this is, you know, I always appreciate thinking, you know, all the years that Dub Nation has kind of hung in there when the Warriors weren't good enough, and now it's like, could they win their fourth title in 8 years? Like, is this really happening? And it's just, you got to just love it, appreciate it, be in it, and they win it tomorrow, it'll be fantastic. If it comes back to Game 7 on Father's Day at Chase Center, oh, man, like, just the way sports is and the way the Warriors are, they are super compelling, and we got at least one more week or the rest of the week to certainly enjoy it.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Bob.
All right, guys, see you. Be good.
Bob Fitzgerald. You can hear him on the call tomorrow on 95.7 The Game, tip-off at 6 o'clock. Warriors Live, 4:30. Get you started. Good stuff from Fitz.
I'm excited. I'm just going to drop a... I'm excited, Steiny.
That's fine. I mean, see, you get a better perspective, I think, obviously, than I do, or the people that can't go back and forth between the cities. What do you think the atmosphere is going to be like tomorrow in Boston?
I think it'll be great. I think it'll be a little tight. I don't think it's going to quite be as loud as it was in Game 3 and Game 4. I mean, I was thinking about it this way, and it's obvious, but not everybody necessarily thinks it through. Game 3, going into it, hey, you know, if you're a Celtics fan and you're in Boston, it's like, Celtics did what they had to do. Now it's time to take hold of this series. Like, it's just going to be incredible, right? In Game 3. Then they win Game 3. And then it's, so you're plus one in the series. You got a chance to go up 3-1. It's going to level up even from that. Although, I do think the Warriors, with their run in Game 3, even though they didn't win that game, but coming back and taking the lead after they were down by as many as they were, I think it did put the crowd in the TD Garden on notice. And so when the Celtics clearly weren't playing as well in Game 4 as they were in Game 3, and Steph got going, I felt like they kind of knew. Like, I felt like they kind of knew. It was still loud, and the Celtics still had, what, the 7-point lead there in the second half at one point, but it never got to 10, never got to 12 or 14, and there was just a little different sound to it in Game 4. Because I think a lot of those fans thought, uh-oh, this is, you know, we're witnessing something special and our team may not quite have enough. But now you fast forward to tomorrow and it's a third different. Now they're behind a game for the first time in the series. So I think they really are, and this is one area where I think the Celtics fans have been better than the Warrior fans in the series, is they are better at kind of pushing their team forward when they need a boost. So I think everything is going to be, Celtics are the underdogs, we're not going home, we're going to fight for our life to stay alive. And I do think that's a different rallying cry, which can bring a lot of energy and desperation. But to Bob's point, kind of bringing it back to, well, if it's close at halftime, or if it is a game where the Warriors are making a bunch of threes, even if the Celtics are hanging with them or are slightly ahead, I do think there could be some uh-oh moments in the building, because this is a smart fan base. I'll say that they're rowdy, profane at times, as has been noted, but you know, there were it's been really kind of a joy to cover this series in Boston, because there's even times where like a big will get switched out on a wing player and the crowd will kind of rise like take him, and I'm thinking, damn, okay, like you got it, like not everybody would just notice that, you know,
right,
as a fan base. So it's, but I think it could be a little tight at times if the Warriors make them tight.
You brought something up, and I'm being joined by John Dickinson. Daryl the Guru Johnson, not in today. He's at his son's graduation, high school graduation. So we got JD in Boston. I'm in San Francisco. We were talking a little bit before the show. I'm just gonna kind of tee you up here. You think that there was maybe a 3 to 5 minute stretch in this series that was maybe the most important 3 to 5 minute stretch of the series. Go ahead and tell the listeners what you said.
Well, I thought it was the end of the third quarter in Game 5 when the Celtics came out and at the beginning of the quarter just locked the Warriors down completely. It looked like Game 1. I mean, it really looked like they found a gear that they hadn't been at previously, other than maybe in Game 1 and in Game 3. For a consistent period of time, and they were locking the Warriors down, just putting the clamp down, however you want to say it, turning the faucet off, whatever it is, and then they start hitting some threes, and the Celtics come back from being down, and they take the lead, and it felt a lot like Game 1, like, oh boy, hey, are the Warriors going to be down? Like, the Warriors had no answer, essentially, but then they did have an answer. Klay Thompson hit 2 threes. Jordan Poole hit a three, and they were guarded threes, right? It's kind of what Fitz was saying about, hey, sometimes the Warriors are just so good they make shots. There were a couple of quickies that maybe the Warriors missed in Game 1, and things got out of hand on them in that fourth quarter. Klay hit two of them, and Poole hit one, and then Poole banks in the lucky one at the end of the third quarter, and all of a sudden I'm thinking, the Warriors are up. They look like they might be down 8 or 10 going to the fourth quarter. They're up one. To me, that was the moment where that game ended, in a way, and I think that was the pivot point of, and I think I texted you in the moment. I said, man, these guys are just not going to be denied. That right. might be the moment in this series, as it turns out, where I think the Warriors maybe won the series, whether they end it tomorrow or end it Sunday. I think that stretch where they didn't let that game get out of hand and go down and lose and be 3-2 coming back here, I just think it was an under-discussed sequence of events. Yeah, the Poole bank shot at the end of the quarter was talked about a lot, and the fourth quarter was talked about a lot. But if the Warriors are down 10 before any of that fourth quarter happens, I don't think the fourth quarter plays out the way that it does.
John Dickinson joining Matt Steinmetz on 95.7 The Game. Dal, the Guru Johnson, out today. Hey, what did you make of... And I'm not sure what to make of it, and maybe we won't know what to make of it until everything's done. But, I mean, Steph Curry looked tired in Game 5. And I'm joking about this, and trust me, I'm just joking, but that technical foul shot he took, JD, may have been the worst free throw I have ever seen Steph Curry take in my entire life. Just an outlier, or, you know, do you get the sense that maybe, you know, hey, it's a long season.
He might be tired. I mean, you look at what he did in Game 4, and right. He's a little banged up. I know we had quit talking about the fact that he's banged up when he plays as well as he did in Game 4, but he's a little banged up, and the Celtics changed it up on him, as we've all noted, and he struggled. Now, so to your point, yeah, is he tired? Yeah, looks like he's a little tired. Could he drop 40 tomorrow? Of course. Like, so it's not... I mean, could he struggle again? I mean, maybe, and then we start talking about, boy, is this team running out of gas? Did they just hang on in Game 5? I mean, all right. of those things are kind of conversations for Friday and Saturday if the Warriors can't win it tomorrow. But, you know, it's one game in a box. They can win it and render a lot of this moot regardless of how they do it.
Yeah, and that's the one thing, if I were a Warrior fan, that I'd be a little bit worried about. It's that it feels like every time you feel like you might know something that, you know, that'll linger past one game, let's say. Well, it turns out not to be the case. You know, after Game 3, I'm thinking, Warriors might not have enough scoring to win this series. Well, then they win the next two games, and they get contributions from a lot of different players, and it's Boston who's had trouble scoring. And basically what I would say to that is just, yeah, you know what? Fourth quarter of game five, you know, depending on your perspective, you could say, Warriors, I think Boston knows. They knew at the end of game five, you know what, that the Warriors are better and they're wearing down and the Warriors have figured something. I won't say that until I actually see it. I mean, Boston can win tomorrow night. I think we all acknowledge that, right?
Well, that's the question I hit you with as I was, you know, roving around the streets of Boston here before I headed over to the studio, and we had our little pre-show call, and I flew a good chunk of the day yesterday early, 5 a.m., and got into Boston right around the time you guys were starting your show with Goo, and I said to you, I said, you know, what's the sense in the Bay? Do people feel like the series is over? And I know you addressed it a little bit because I don't feel like the series is over. I mean, I think we can discuss all the things we're talking about in the big picture and, wow, this is amazing if the Warriors can do this. And that's just kind of part of the deal for the next couple of days, setting the table for something incredibly special if the Warriors are able to win this thing tomorrow night. But I don't feel like this series is over yet. I mean, it feels like it's... And so that's why I wanted to ask you. So just like, what was your sense? And I guess kind of reiterate maybe what the sense has been back in the Bay, because I do think the Warriors are going to win the series, but there's a difference between thinking the Warriors are going to win the series and thinking, oh, it's over. They're going to kind of cruise tomorrow and it's, you know, Warriors in six.
Well, my answer is going to be incongruous, if you know what I mean, because...
Shocking.
Yes. When I came in to do the show yesterday after they won game five, I said to my producer, Evan, I said, yeah, it feels like the Warriors won the series last night. It just did. But yet, by the same token, I also maintain and believe, you know what? Game four was more important than game five. I mean, to me, game four was more important to the Warriors than game five. And the reason, obviously, is because if they'd lost game four and they're down 3-1, I mean, now they're looking at having to do something pretty historic. So my answer is I think the Warriors are going to win the series. But I've seen enough games and I've watched enough to know that that doesn't mean anything. But I'll tell you what, and I say to people, I can almost see the Warriors getting blown out tomorrow. In Boston, where it happens like game three, where Boston just comes out playing with their hair on fire. Warriors try to match that intensity. They do. But, you know, at some point, and this is the fascinating thing to me about the championship pedigree. At some point, we're going to find out whether kind of the Warriors are going for it or whether when they realize, you know what? We got to be smart and fight for another day, fight on another day. And obviously, you know, maybe the Warriors blow out the Celtics. I've seen stranger things happen. So that's kind of where I'm at. I want to see a seventh game simply because there's just no more pressure than that in professional sports. And I think these two teams are evenly matched. And I just love to see a game seven.
It'd be incredible. It really would. And a game seven, 6 years to the day of game seven of the NBA Finals in 2016. No Warrior fan wants to see a game seven. Come on, Steiny.
Well, no, but now, of course they don't. But the other thing is you win a game seven, it's almost more rewarding. Have the Warriors, yeah, they won one title at home, right? One of their
titles. They won in 17. Yeah,
okay.
15 away in Cleveland, 18 in Cleveland, and then 17 they won at Oracle. And then, yeah, the Cavs and Raptors also won at Oracle.
Well, I mean, that's another thing. You know, Warrior fans, why wouldn't you want to win this championship in the new arena? Way to christen it. Mm-hmm. All right.
Cleveland, this is for you.
All right, here's what we're going to do on the other side. We've got Howard Bryant. He just authored a new book on Ricky Henderson. He's also he's either a Boston native or he lives in Boston. So we're going to talk, obviously, Warriors Celtics with him. You can also hear him on the very classy NPR. That's, yeah, mm-hmm. He's elevated, mm-hmm. and he's on our show on the other side mm-hmm. on 95.7.
This is Moses Moody, and you are listening to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
All righty, no Daryl the Guru Johnson today. John Dickinson sitting in for him. And let's go out and talk to our next guest. He works for Meadowlark Media. That's Dan Levitard's company. He's ESPN also, and the very classy NPR. Howard Bryant, he's an author. He's a Renaissance man. Thank you so much for joining us, Howard.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Let's start out, because I know you got a lot of ties to Boston, so we're going to talk about the finals, but let's get into the book you wrote, simply called Ricky. And we're all very acquainted with Ricky Henderson out here in the Bay. But why did you want to write a book on Ricky Henderson?
Well, I think the biggest reason for wanting to do Ricky was I wanted to do something fun. It's been a really difficult decade. It's been a long time in writing about Colin Kaepernick and police and protest and all of these other things, all of it very important, all of it really necessary, and it's the moment that we're in. But I also felt like there was a moment where I couldn't quite hear myself, where I was wondering if I really needed to remind myself why we watch these athletes, why we were interested in them, why they mean so much to us. And also, coming off of the protest and all that other stuff, I'm also, in my last real baseball book before the Hank Aaron book, was also on steroids. So it was like, is there a character out there, a person out there that really can remind us why we watch these athletes and why baseball is so great? Ricky was really a no-brainer for me. And also because I started my career in Oakland. I started my career at the Oakland Tribune covering prep. So I'd been to Oakland Tech and McClymans and Skyline and the rest. And knowing that history, really, I was really looking for a vehicle to really talk about how fantastic that place really has been.
Howard Bryant joining us on 95.7 The Game. He's recently authored a book called Ricky, about Ricky Henderson. I guess here's my question. If you don't know who Ricky Henderson is, my question would be, why is Ricky Henderson compelling to you?
Well, I think that the biggest reason, I mean, to me, I love the arc of the story. One, he's the greatest leadoff hitter of all time. He's the greatest base stealer of all time. But he's also one of the most amazing characters as a person, in terms of blending of fact and fiction, and did this story happen or did that happen? I think there was that, and I think there was also the story arc, the narrative arc that comes with him, how a person who really was one of the most unpopular players in the game early in his career, how by the end there's this wonderful nostalgia that people want to love Ricky, and they tell these lovable Ricky stories, and they want to celebrate him, and he's this combination of Satchel Paige and Yogi Berra, and people just love it. And so I wanted to explore that arc. And I think the biggest thing is that he absolutely obliterated the record book. I mean, here's a guy that people do not really think of as one of the greatest players of all time. And then you look at his numbers, and then you talk to the analytics guys, and they'll tell you with the advanced metrics they use today, Ricky's even better than we thought. So he's a titan in the game. He's one of the Mount Rushmore, Mount Everest players. And to me, it was really sort of a no-brainer to give him his props.
Howard, how much of what you're talking about and what you wrote about is just swag, both in why maybe he wasn't liked, but then why he was liked, and then also, does the game need more Ricky Hendersons? Just straight up. Yeah, the talent, of course, immense and in many ways unprecedented, but just more characters, more energy, more swag.
Oh, no question. No question. I think that when you look at guys like Ricky today, there are no guys like Ricky today.
Right.
You think about the way that Ricky played, and people say, well, what's Ricky's legacy? And sometimes I wonder if he has a legacy now, because they don't do what Ricky did. They don't steal bases. They don't play the game with the energy the way that he played it. And so he's sort of a unicorn now, whereas previously you would think, yeah, there were all kinds of guys that there was a Ricky legacy. There were a bunch of players who came after him, the Vince Colemans of the world and the Kenny Loftons and you know, these guys who just really did, you know, the Harold Reynolds guys who came after Ricky. But today, Ricky is such a unique player. You're never going to see what Ricky Henderson was ever again. They've been playing this game since right after the Civil War. And show me another guy that you can project out with 3,000 hits, 2,000 runs, 2,000 walks, and 1,000-plus stolen bases. Never going to see it again.
Howard, you got a Ricky story that came to light in this book that maybe we haven't heard?
Well, my favorite Ricky story, I don't know if it's a story as much as it is a fact, is that Ricky's career began in 1979, and his last major league at-bat was in 2003. And to begin the 2002 season, Ricky started with the Red Sox. From 1979 to 2001, the year before he joined Boston, Ricky had stolen more bases than the Red Sox during that same period. He had outstolen an entire team. And that just shows you how good he was. That's impossible. It's really, really, I mean, it's not even hard to do. It's impossible for one person over a course to outsteal an entire team over 20 years. I'd like to see somebody give me a similar stat than that one.
Interesting. Howard Bryant joining us on 95.7 The Game, author of the new book, Ricky, a biography of Oakland's, one of Oakland's greatest athletes of all time, Ricky Henderson. Here's how I'm going to segue into the NBA Finals. You talked about how Ricky obliterated some records and record books. Is there a comparison to be made, at least as an athlete?
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
With Steph Curry.
That's a great question. I mean, obviously, in terms of the uniqueness, in terms of the playing, I mean, Steph Curry is going to be, you know, go down as one of the most significant players, not just one of the greatest players of all time, but one of the most significant players. One of the handful of players in the same vein as Dr. J and some of the other really, really great players who literally changed the way the game is played. Not just the accomplishments, but how the game is actually played. And there are kids right now who take shots today that you would have never, ever, ever done in any other generation. He is that unique. He's that great. So, yeah, there's absolutely a comp there. I think that when you look at the NBA Finals and when you think about what these, you know, what this series has been, it's been a very, very compelling series for a series where no game has gone underneath double digits in the final score. But at the same time, I really think that the Celtics were very clearly the superior team for the first three games and 44 minutes. And after that, have looked, not if not completely overmatched, they look like they've run out of gas. They look like the Warriors have outlasted them. And you would have never thought that 24-year-old Jason Tatum would be outclassed by 34-year-old Steph Curry in the endurance department. And yet that is what it looks like is happening. We'll see if the Celtics have a last stand, if they've got one more second wind, and then we get to a winner-take-all. But right now, it looks like the Celtics are finally realizing that this is their first rodeo, and also that maybe they're paying the price finally for those long series against Milwaukee and against Miami.
Howard, if the Warriors do go on to win one of the next two, and Steph and Clay and Draymond now have four championships, and they hadn't won one in 4 years, and you look at just the way the last couple of years have gone with the injuries, and they were completely out of the title landscape, just how surprised are you, and where do you think this puts... Does this put the three of them in a different stratosphere? Does this put Steph in a different stratosphere or category as far as superstars?
I think Steph was already in a different stratosphere, and I think that people who have tried really, really hard from the beginning of his time in the league to diminish him, to tell, you know, he has defied the conventional wisdom of basketball. And you can keep denying what he's been doing, but just like Ricky in a lot of ways, at some point the numbers defy you. You cannot deny what he's done. You can't, there's no way you can sort of dance around what he's been. And if they get this title, and it's looking like they're pretty damn close to it, obviously, then yeah, I think that I don't view it necessarily as anything more unique than what they've done in the past, because they were riddled with injuries. It's not as though they just stopped playing and suddenly got good again. I mean, they were really, really hurt. And you lose Kevin Durant as well. But I think it's an incredible testament to that team. It's an incredible testament to that group. This group knows how to win championships. This group knows how to finish. And they have done something this year. I still felt like there was no real dominant team this year, no matter what Phoenix did. This was one of those years, and obviously the way that the Lakers kind of fell off as well, I didn't look at anybody and say some one team is head and shoulders above everybody else. So I don't see it as a crowning achievement in that way, but it's absolutely, to be the last team standing, it means a hell of a lot, especially to not a lot of guys walk around with four titles from the same team, and for them to finish this job is absolutely, you know, top-notch dynasty stuff.
Howard, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Good luck with the book, and really enjoyed our conversation.
No, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
All right. That's Howard Bryant. He just authored a new book, Ricky, a biography of one of Oakland's greatest athletes and Hall of Famer, Ricky Henderson. And, of course, Howard, early in his journalism career, worked for the Oakland Tribune, so he's very familiar with the Bay Area.
Excellent.
Know what? He's one of those perspective guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Definitely. On everything.
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing. Yeah, I wanted to, and maybe our listeners could help out. You know, he said Ricky wasn't well-liked early in his career. Not that part I don't remember.
I think it was just some of the, you know, whether it was flip, you know, he was a bat flipper. He was he would stare at his home runs. I mean, he would do the snatch catch. Remember the snatch catch?
That's true, yeah.
He'd have the fly ball, and you know, he'd catch it and kind of spread his hands away from each other. Ricky played with a lot. He was one of my favorite players just as a kid, and I caught, you know, the late 80s, early 90s Ricky, you know, that era, not necessarily the early 90s or the early 80s Ricky, but yeah, he was one of the most fun players to watch, period, because he did play with a little bit of swag.
Well, the thing about Ricky Henderson, and to me, this is always this is how you become one of the greatest of all time. You have a special talent, and then B, you've got a foundation of fundamentals that are also elite. And you know, you think of Ricky Henderson, oh, he's unbelievably fast. Yeah, well, you know what? He also may have had the greatest eye at the plate, you know, of any leadoff hitter that ever played the game. And yet, okay, so he's got a good eye. But he can also hit 28 home runs in a season as a leadoff hitter. You know what I mean? So I'm starting to now remember. I remember him with the Yankees, too.
And he had a really slow home run trot.
That's
for
right.
Being the fastest guy in the game and leading, you know, all-time steals and all of that, he had a slow trot when he hit one out.
I remember being at Yankee Stadium for a game when Henderson, and he played for Billy Martin in New York too, if I'm not mistaken. You know, the Yankees won the game 2-1, and Ricky had a walk, a steal. He moved over on a ground ball to the right side. And he scored on a sacrifice fly. And that's how he did it a lot of times back then.
Yeah, the year that stands out to me is, and I remember where the A's got him back in 89 and they beat the Giants, but the 1990 year where he was the AL MVP, that was the year the A's lost to the Reds, 65 stolen bases, he scored 119 runs, he hit 28 home runs. Man. That year. So think about that. 28 homers, 119 runs. He had 97 walks, and then led the league in steals with 65 steals.
Right.
I mean, just unbelievable.
Yeah. Good stuff from Howard Bryant. Last time, he's author of a new book, Ricky, a biography of Ricky Henderson. Let's jump into a couple calls. We got a little window here before we go to Chris Broussard at 2 o'clock. Once again, Matt Steinmetz with you, along with John Dickinson. John Dickinson's in Boston. He'll be there for game 6, obviously. Darryl the Guru Johnson enjoying a wonderful day with his son, who's graduating from high school. Guru will be back tomorrow, and as long as I'm on a little bit of roll of telling you what's going on, Darryl the Guru Johnson and myself, tomorrow, we will be at the Kezar Pub. The Kezar Pub, 770 Stanion Street. We're not only going to be doing our show from there, from 12 to 3. Feel free to stop by during that three-hour period. But we're also going to hang out and watch Game 6 from the Kezar Pub. So if you get any time and you're in that neck of the woods, come say hi. We'd love to meet you guys and have a good laugh and have some fun watching Game 6. Yeah, J.D.?
No, it's just that's going to be a lot of fun.
It is.
I mean, go if you don't have plans, go do it. Go watch the game with Goo. Go watch the game,
man,
with Steiny.
You know what's funny now that I think about it?
I'm a snob.
I'm trying to think if I've ever watched a game with Goo. I mean, I know we did post games together.
It didn't mean you watched the game together, though.
That's true. You know what? I don't, because he's always in the lab, and there's nobody welcome in the lab. So, yeah, maybe Guru. I'm going to get a taste of the Guru experience watching a game tomorrow. All right. I'm up for it. Let's go to Chris. Chris is in Oakland, wants to jump in here. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, guys. Man, I'm really tempted to call in sick and go to Kezar Pub tomorrow.
Do it. You want me to make the call for you?
I'm really, really, really tempted.
Well, and then if they win it, the beauty is it's Thursday, so if then they win it, you already called in sick Thursday, and it's like, you know what, I'm just not feeling better Friday, you know, because I was feeling sick Thursday. It's kind of a 2-for-1.
Home.
I got you.
And just point me in the direction home. So here's something we haven't been talking about. We're talking about a lot of people being rested or tired or weary. We haven't seen an overtime game because usually someone takes a decisive lead towards the end. But when you're fighting for your last breath, you may be clinging, and it may be, we got to figure out who's going to outlast who in a overtime game.
I mean, you know what? How many have the Warriors played an overtime game in the postseason yet this year? Thanks for the call, Chris.
I don't think so, off the top of my head.
Off the top of my head, I don't think so either.
I've been at all of them. Yeah, nope.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, Howard Bryant talked about it, how, yes, at the end of Game 5, it looked like it was the Celtics who were wearing down, and the Warriors looked fresh. Will that trend continue tonight? I'm sorry, tomorrow? We'll find out. But I tell you what, JD, I get that there haven't, you know, there have been no buzzer beaters. You know, there hasn't, other than Steph's 43-point game, there hasn't been like a defining moment or a game. I still think this has been a great series. And that's why I'm hoping for seven.
Highly competitive series, I think, both ways. I know, I don't subscribe to the, and I know a lot of Warrior fans are like, well, JD, they blew the lead in game one. Otherwise, this series would already been over. Like, no, I mean, the most of that game was close, and the Warriors had a big quarter. The Celtics had a big quarter. Most of game two was close. Warriors blew it out, you know, in the third quarter there. A lot of game three was close with the Celtics getting off to the big lead, but the Warriors made their run, and that game was close at least going into the fourth quarter. So mostly I think it has been back and forth just with one run of separation for each team in a lot of these games. So I think it's been highly competitive, which is why I don't necessarily think it's over, but I also think if the Celtics are fatigued, it doesn't manifest itself as much early in the game, but it's going to manifest itself late in the game if the Warriors keep putting pressure on them to finish it, because the Warriors are just so hard to beat in a 48-minute game. They're always just kind of lurking around the corner for the most part, unless you turn it into a legitimate blowout.
Right, and that's very, very difficult to do against the Warriors. And, you know, it's a game I've played with myself over the last 7 or 8 years, having watched the Warriors, you know, every game, is that I can't stand when fans think a game's over because the Warriors are down by a certain number of points with a certain amount of time. It's just like, after watching the Warriors for as long as I've watched them, like, you cannot think you've put them away until you've put them away. And it's their ability to score so fast, to me, is one of the things that down the line I'm going to remember about this team. Just how, and it's kind of unfair, because I heard Klay Thompson at the podium today, and he was talking about their defense and how, yes, that has been a staple, and it obviously has. But their defense probably, in terms of legacy, will get a little lost, because their legacy is going to be their explosiveness on the offensive end and just how they could shoot the ball from so far out so accurately.
Yeah, their defense in this series in particular, that's been, I think, the biggest difference as the series has gone on. Game four, fourth quarter defense, slowing the Celtics down. And then in Game 5, just making life a lot more difficult for good chunks of that game. And then in the fourth quarter, and forcing turnovers. What did we talk about after Game 3? And Friedel's been all over this. We had him on earlier. The Warriors have to force more turnovers than they were forcing in the early to middle part of this series. And they started doing it. And as they've started to do it, they've felt a lot more in control. It's still been close and competitive, but the Warriors have felt more in control, really, over the course of the last game and a half.
Yeah. Let's go to Steve. Steve's in Alameda. What's going on, Steve? How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing great. Hey, Steiny, you and Guru are the best. And then you got John coming off the bench. I like that.
Thank you.
Two things can be equally true, as someone once said. So Ricky Henderson, getting back to, we're actually talking about an Oakland A for 5 minutes. He was the greatest leadoff man in the history of baseball. And people used to say he was a hot dog and he would fake injuries. I don't believe that, but I think that was the rap on him.
You know what? Hey Steve, thanks for calling. That does ring a bell. That he was maybe I'm wrong if the way I remember him, but he was a little bit high maintenance in terms of his injuries. Like he didn't like to play unless he's kind of a little like Iguodala. You know what I mean?
If he wasn't 100%, he'd rather just get the day off.
Right. And you know what? When you play at the level that he did, maybe that's why you do it, because when you're not 100%, you know you can't get to the greatness that you can play with normally. All right, here's what's coming down. We got Chris Broussard coming up next. He's a co-host on FS1's morning show. First things first, he's also a good friend of mine from way back in the day, Chris Broussard. We're going to get back into the Golden State Warriors, Boston Celtics. Game 6 tomorrow from Boston, 6 o'clock tip, 4:30. Damon and Ratto get you started with Warriors Live. And we'll be back to talk to Chris Broussard on the other side.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.